This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me in the studio is Carey Jr. II. He is the show's producer.
Good morning.
Hey, Carey. So a little bit of a nerd alert for our listeners today. We're going to talk about something that gets a little in the weeds about our politics and how they work in this country. There are lots of people who have been thinking about what would happen if President Joe Biden, who is the presumptive Democratic nominee for president this year, were to step aside and say, you know, I thought I could do this, but I don't think I can anymore. We've got the Democratic convention coming up. Mm-hmm. What would that convention look like if he were not one of the people who was vying for the nomination?
Yeah, and this one's a bit timely. It's also one that we've heard a lot of conversation around ever since that first presidential debate between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. Everyone's wondering what the potential future might be going forward into this election. So, I mean, it's kind of worth understanding a little bit more about how this delegation process works at the convention and how they pick their candidates, because for a lot of us, in recent history, it's just been whoever is leading in the primary gets most of the delegates. But that's not always how it's been. So
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I'm not going to either convention this year. Mm-hmm. I have not been to a convention in more than a decade, in fact. But I used to go each year, each election. And, you know, there never was, in the time that I was attending conventions, any question about what was going to actually happen, like mm-hmm. who was going to be nominated. The only mystery was generally who the vice president pick, the presidential pick might be in some cases.
And then there's the speeches too, right? There's
the speeches,
the up-and-coming political leaders.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I will never forget Kwame Kilpatrick's address at an early convention, and of course Barack Obama's. But you know, this question about whether an actual convention, a working convention, could take place in 2024, I think is really interesting and intriguing. I have to say, I don't really know how it is supposed to work because I haven't mm-hmm. ever seen it. I've only ever read about it. And so that's what we want to talk about today. We've got some really great guests to help us out. Tell us who we have today, Carey.
Yes, we have Abbas Alawiya. He is an uncommitted delegate for Michigan for the Democratic Convention. And then we also are joined by Dr. Mac Dolick. He is a political historian at George Washington University. He's also the author of Birchers, How the John Birch Society Radicalized the American Right. I'm excited to get into the weeds on this one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Abbas Alawiya, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you so much for having me.
Are your bags packed yet for Chicago?
I am on standby.
It's a little ways off, right? You've got a little time. And Dr. Matt Dolick, it's great to have you with us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So I do want to start with just some very basic defining that we need to do about conventions and delegates and this process. And I'm going to start with you, Dr. Dolick. Tell us how we have come to the place where primary elections generally decide who is going to be the nominee for president of the two major parties, and that the conventions themselves are just kind of shows. They're entertainment and they're rallying points, but there isn't real work, the real work that used to have to take place at these conventions. Give us a little bit of a history lesson here.
Yeah. Well, it's great to be on. We've really got to go back to 1968. And some listeners may recall, or they certainly may have read about, the chaos at that year's Democratic National Convention, mm-hmm. also eerily enough in Chicago.
In Chicago, yes.
Where, yep, same place. And Hubert Humphrey became the nominee. Lyndon Johnson had stepped down basically as the presumptive nominee because of the Vietnam War. And the Democratic Party was fractured over the war, many other issues. And even though Humphrey was sort of the chosen candidate by LBJ, there was a real sense in the party, and I think in the post-civil rights, post-voting rights world, that the process needed to be opened up. It could not just be these vast majority of whom are white men in the proverbial smoke-filled room deciding who the nominee was going to be. And so in keeping, in a sense, with the spirit of the voting rights revolution of the 60s, both parties after 1968 started to open up to make their primaries, because there were primaries before 1968, but to make their primary elections binding, meaning that the voters, so before 68, you know, there were a handful of primaries, there were kind of beauty contests, but the primaries were non-binding. So whoever won those primaries didn't mean they were getting that state's delegates. But after 68, if you won, let's say, the state of Michigan in a primary, those delegates were pledged to you as a candidate. And so it really became the choice of the primary electorate rather than the party bosses. And that, in a nutshell, I think is the system we have today.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to point out that before 68 and sort of into that convention, we shouldn't romanticize what was going on. These were not really open conventions in the way that I think we're imagining you might have one today. As you say, they were kind of rigged, right? I mean, there were power brokers who made these decisions together and left most other people out of it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair way to put it. I mean, there were some contested conventions in 1912, 1924, where a party would have to go to multiple ballots, sometimes dozens of ballots, to figure out who the nominee was. And those were obviously quite wild and contested. But who were they contested among? Well, the people in the hall, right? And who were the people in the hall? These were the party power brokers, right? The primarily white men who controlled the levers of power. The parties were much more powerful back then, and that created some big downsides. And so opening up the process to the primary voters and also having delegates, especially in the Democratic Party, that are much more reflective of the demographic composition of the country. I think that those are actually overall quite positive changes, and it democratized the nominating process.
Abbas Alawi, I want to bring you into the conversation here. You're an uncommitted delegate for Michigan for the Democratic Convention. First, tell us what that means. Tell us how you became a delegate. What was the process that chose you to do this? And then tell us what you're thinking as we get closer to Chicago in just a few weeks, and this process and the doubt that I guess has kind of cropped up around what should happen. It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's also my birthday, so this is a very special birthday treat birthday for me to dig into this and to learn from Dr. Dalek, who has much more interesting information than I do. But I'm happy to sort of share how I'm coming to my work as a DNC delegate, as an uncommitted DNC delegate. I spent the last 5 years on Capitol Hill working for Congressman Andy Levin, Congressman Tlaib, Congresswoman Bush, working very closely with President Biden and his White House to advance his agenda. Soon after I moved back home here to southeastern Michigan this past fall, we experienced, you know, post-October, on October 7th, the killing of Israeli civilians by Hamas, and post-October 7th, the mass killing of Palestinians using U.S. taxpayer funds. There was an article in The Lancet that came out last week that suggests that the death toll, which we understood before this to be between 30 and 40,000, to be around 180,000 Palestinians who've been killed, again, using U.S. taxpayer funds. So it's in that context that I became or that I plugged into a movement, helped lead a movement here in southeastern Michigan that has spread around the country, of getting folks to vote uncommitted, to use the ballot box, or to use the box on our ballot that says uncommitted, as a vote for peace and against war, as a way of convincing President Joe Biden that he needs to embrace a different policy approach if we're going to beat Donald Trump here in November. Part of the reason why I became involved in that movement and helping lead that movement is I know that people here in Michigan, people I'm related to, people I went to school with, feel deeply betrayed by the president's policy on Gaza in particular. And so we were telling him, hey, you have a problem here. You're risking handing this presidency over to Donald Trump if you don't change your policy. And unfortunately, President Biden hasn't changed his policy significantly. He's changed the way he talks about it while he continues sending billions of dollars to the Israeli military to fund the genocide that we're seeing unfold in Gaza. So it's in that context that we ran a campaign here and earned over 101,000 votes in Michigan and nationwide over 730,000 votes for uncommitted, for peace, and against war. And what that means, because we earned more than 15% of the vote for uncommitted in two congressional districts here in Michigan, we earned two uncommitted delegate positions to be sent to the DNC. And so how I became elected a delegate is I went to our congressional district Democratic Party convention, which was held a couple of months ago now, a few months ago now, and was the candidate for the uncommitted delegate seat. And so it's an interesting moment in history that we're experiencing now, because now there are all kinds of questions about whether the president can win, not just because of his Gaza policy, but also because of other issues that have come up following the debate, following the unprecedented, attempted assassination that we experienced over the weekend.
Yeah.
And so the question of how do we beat the hate-filled agenda that Donald Trump is putting forth is a really important one that is on the mind of a lot of delegates I'm talking to.
So as a delegate then to the convention, what do you imagine your chance is to make that point and make it matter, right? As you say, you're one of two delegates who are uncommitted, and I want you to explain just a little more about what that means you would do at the convention. Most of the delegates are committed to President Biden. You are an uncommitted delegate. I want to draw that distinction. But then tell me why that matters, or why it could matter in the process here.
Yeah. So, I mean, the uncommitted movement didn't set out to win delegates to begin with. We just wanted to
Be heard.
We wanted to be heard. We wanted to save lives. In the process of doing our work and organizing, we earned over 30 delegate seats across the country that will be going to the convention to lift up the mandate from voters, what we know is central to the base of the Democratic Party, that most Democratic voters don't want unlimited war. Most Democratic voters want a ceasefire. Most Democratic voters don't want us sending unconditional money to Israel or to any other country to kill at a massive scale children or civilians. And so in this context now, because we earned some uncommitted delegate seats, relative to the seats of our Democratic Party nominee, Joe Biden, there are like 4,000 delegates, right? So 30 delegates is not a lot of delegates to meaningfully influence the official proceedings of the DNC. But what we know is that when we show up, when we engage the media, when we organize at the convention, we're speaking for hundreds of thousands of voters across the country, Democratic voters, for whom Gaza is a top policy issue. And so part of my responsibility, in order to get this delegate seat, I had to pledge that when I go to the convention, my vote will be a vote for uncommitted. I would not be committed to any particular candidate.
Right.
The nearly 4,000 Biden delegates pledged that they would vote for President Biden.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because President Biden last week was asked, well, what do you think about if your delegates don't support you? And he said, my delegates are free to do whatever they want. Which I don't understand to be correct, actually. Dr. Dalek might have better information.
Let's get Dr. Dalek to talk a little more about how that works. Abbas is an uncommitted delegate, which does not pledge him to anybody. But most of the delegates to the convention are pledged to President Biden. So let's talk about what that means now, given that the president is still the presumptive nominee, and then a little later we'll talk about what would happen if he were to step aside.
Yeah, so fascinating listening to this. I think Abbas is absolutely right. The delegates, and frankly, it sounds like even the uncommitted delegates, they are not free to just show up in Chicago and say, I've changed my mind, or to ignore. They are pledged delegates. And that means that, again, as Abbas was saying so well, that they are bound, they're pledged to represent the voices of the thousands, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of people who went to the polls to vote. Now, in the Democratic Party rules, there is this clause that people have talked about that relates to one's conscience. And so there is a kind of potentially technical loophole by which some delegates pledged to Biden could say, I can't in good conscience vote for someone who I don't think now is up, for another 4 years as president.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to happen. I mean, I don't, these are, these are 4,000 plus delegates reflecting the will of, as President Biden said, 14 million voters. They've taken a pledge. And so, I think the idea that they're free to do what they want is I agree, it's absolutely not correct. And the whole, and just to kind of back up a second, the whole premise of these post-1968 reforms in both parties is that the primary electorate is king, right? Mm. King and queen, right? The primary electorate gets to choose who the nominee will be. And so the delegates are really vehicles to ratify that decision. And that's why, in part, these conventions are heavily controlled, right? Heavily vetted, controlled by the presumptive nominee, and why, they are more for messaging and for showing the public, what they stand for as a party, as opposed to, as you were saying at the very beginning of this program, deciding, the substantive matter of, who's going to be the nominee.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this really interesting conversation about political conventions, delegates, and the choices that get made in the next couple of weeks with regard to the 2024 presidential election in our country. We want to get going with you on the phones and on social as well. Call and tell us, are you watching the conventions? The Republican convention, of course, is now in its second day in Milwaukee. The Democrats will gather in Chicago a little later this summer. How interested are you in what happens during these conventions? Do you think we ought to have more open conventions? What would that look like? How would that work, especially on the Democratic side this year? People are asking questions about what would happen if President Joe Biden decided not to be the nominee this year. Give us a call. Let us know what you make of all of that. And again, if you're someone who has participated in the primary process already, how do you feel about the possibility that the person you voted for may not end up being the candidate? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and we're talking about political conventions and delegates and the choices that they make. We're going to see both parties do that over the next few weeks as we get closer to the 2024 presidential election. There are real questions swirling around the Democratic side of the ticket. President Joe Biden is under a lot of pressure, including from some elected members of his party, to step aside and allow someone else to represent the party on the ticket in November. But one of the questions is, how do you do that? If the president were to come out tomorrow and say, I'm not going to accept the nomination to be the Democratic nominee in November, how would it work? to choose another person. That's what we're talking about today with Abbas Alawiya, who is an uncommitted delegate from Michigan to the Democratic Convention. Also with us is Professor Matt Dalek. He is a political historian at George Washington University and the author of Birchers, How the John Birch Society Radicalized the American Right. We want to hear from you as well during the conversation. Give us a call and let us know how much attention you're paying to these conventions. The Republicans are gathered right now in Milwaukee. This is day two of their convention. Are you paying attention to the speeches? Are you paying attention to things like President Trump's choice of a vice presidential running mate? What do you get out of the conventions? What do you expect to see at the conventions? And also give us a sense if you would like to see an open convention on either side at some point. It's not something we've seen in a really long time in this country. Would you like to see the Democrats do something else than nominate their presumptive winner, Joe Biden? Also give us a sense if you voted for Joe Biden in the primary, how you might feel if he decided he didn't want the nomination, and how would you feel about someone else really getting to choose the person who represents the party? 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. Okay, so Matt Dalek, I want to start now talking about specifically how it would work if President Biden said, hey, I just can't do this, or I don't want to do this, and you got to choose somebody else. The last time something like that happened, to my knowledge, is 1968, when Lyndon Johnson, I think in March of that year, so pretty late, decided that he would not seek re-election. There was a lot of chaos that that ensued after that. And at the convention. But what would it look like if Biden did that, especially as close as we are to the convention taking place?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a great question. I think the short answer is it would be wild, but not necessarily in a bad sense. The power then to decide the nominee would really then switch to the roughly 4,500 delegates at the convention, because the candidates who would step in would be trying to sway a majority of those delegates to vote for them on a ballot, and that's how they would become the new nominee. But I think, you know, drilling down a little bit, there are a couple different scenarios. One is if Biden were to say, I'm stepping aside and I'm giving my full backing to my vice president, Vice President Harris.
Mm-hmm.
It may not end the debate, but it might create, especially given the short time frame, it might create a rallying effect around her. The other option, though, is that, or possibility, is that, you know, Biden steps aside, doesn't endorse anyone, and you have really more of a free-for-all where you have candidates, your governor, right, Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a number of other governors who have been discussed who could be very formidable, obviously the vice president. And they would hold a very mini compressed campaign. They do probably interviews. They would maybe have a debate. I mean, it would be like almost like they have, I guess, in England, like a snap election, or in France, right? It would be incredibly compressed.
Hmm.
But they would have a chance over maybe a few weeks to make their case to the country, to the Democratic Party, to the delegates, and then, you know, they would try to win a majority of the votes. I mean, it would be a crazy event, but it would also be really fascinating to uphold. And the last point I'll just make is that, you know, these delegates, many of them have been elected. They've been elected to represent, you know, their district. They have been maybe they're sitting members of Congress, their party officials. You know, they have a real stake in this process, and they are representative of the Democratic party electorate. And so, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that they would have so much power in this scenario. They'd be very representative.
And it would be just about jockeying literally on the floor for votes, right? I mean, and there could be many, many ballots to get to the point where somebody had enough support to become the nominee. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you could go back to see something like a 1924 party convention or 1912, where you had dozens of ballots before you landed on a winner.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be that kind of uncertain, right? Someone may win it on the first or second ballot. But yes, it would create, I mean, you know, remember when Kevin McCarthy was trying to become the speaker, and there were like over a week, 13 or 14
they couldn't
ballots.
Get it right.
Yeah, exactly. He couldn't get the numbers. He just stuck it, hung in there. You know, it would have a bit of that flavor. And that would have potentially some real upsides. I know some Democrats are worried about it descending into chaos. And then, you know, delegates, even uncommitted delegates, right, like a boss, would be able to find someone. I mean, the advantage would be there would be candidates who would be appealing to all sectors of the Democratic Party electorate.
Right.
And, and you know, that would be a really fascinating and in many respects important process.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it would probably work.
It would be really animated democracy. I mean, in a way that we don't see very frequently. Abbas, I want to bring you back in the conversation here, too. Is this what you want? Do you want chaos? Do you want disorder? Do you want to have an open convention? Is that what the uncommitted vote was all about?
I mean, the uncommitted vote was about influencing our president, our Democratic nominee, to adopt a policy that advances life and not destruction, adopt a policy that stops investing billions of dollars in the killing of Palestinian children. I mean, genuinely, that is why I am an uncommitted delegate.
Yeah.
Is that people central to our base? That's
but that
what they
didn't
want.
Happen. I mean, it didn't
it
work in the sense that
worked,
the president's
right.
still doing what he was doing.
Right.
So is an open convention a way to get more attention to that issue or to choose a candidate that is more in line with what you want?
Yeah, I mean there's so much at play here. there are a few ways that I think about this. One, the mass killing of children by the Israeli military is ongoing, and so our demand continues to be of President Biden, who's the only person who's going to be president until January 2025, to change his policy. And we're appealing to candidate Biden. We're saying we want the best chance possible to beat Donald Trump and his really horrific plans, not just for the Palestinian advocacy movement here in our country or Palestinians living in Israel and in Palestine, but for all of the issues that we care about. And so right now, how we arrive at a situation where we're in the best position to beat Donald Trump, we have negative time. I spoke with a high-ranking person in the DNC who said, there's no way we get anyone other than Biden. Do you not know us? We're not that organized. There's no way we can turn around a national convention and get someone national name recognition in that quick a turnaround. Now, I think it would be interesting, and one of the scenarios that Dr. Dalek mentioned is Vice President Harris. I would personally be very curious to learn. She's put out sort of trial balloons, you know, in the media saying that her Gaza policy would be a little bit different than President Biden's. I'd be interested in learning more about that. But we're up against some really hard deadlines. The Democratic National Convention, the process is pretty orchestrated,
yes.
right? It's
yeah.
pretty scripted.
It
there's been talk of doing a virtual roll call ahead of the late August convention, potentially on August 7th, where the actual voting by delegates for who our nominee is would happen virtually as a way of ensuring that the president could be on the ballot in a key swing state like Ohio. So if this is going to happen, this has got to happen right now. I don't know that we're in a position where it could be a totally open convention. I suppose it could happen, but I think we need to be strategic in positioning ourselves as Democrats in the best position possible to beat Donald Trump. I don't know that an open convention achieves that.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. Name a candidate who you would think would be better than Joe Biden. If you're on the floor and it's open, who are you pushing for?
I mean, I'm pushing for the issues I care about, and
whichever candidate can exactly, align with those.
Exactly, especially because I know that, for example, Arab American voters here in Michigan and young voters across the country who've been part of protest movements, urging divesting from destruction and investing in our communities. For there are a lot of voters like that for whom Gaza is a top issue. Mm-hmm. And so my answer to your question would be, I'm very curious to hear what Vice President Harris, how she would differentiate her Gaza policy from President Biden's.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET to be part of the conversation. Let's start today with Wendy in Detroit. I believe this is Judge Wendy Baxter. Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Let me begin by saying that I will vote for the Democratic candidate for president in November, even if he's propped up like Weekend at Bernie's. That being said, I want to know, is there any learned discussion out there about how America might benefit from in the Democratic Party by them taking a clue, or in the executive office of being able to turn on a dime that is only available with more empowered executive, more autocracy there? I don't want a king by any means. Hmm. I want America to be ready to respond to world powers that are coalescing against us and have the ability for the kind of World War III annihilation that we saw in Japan. And here, I don't like that one man can hold us hostage, kind of like Ruth Bader Ginsburg did, and now we don't have abortion, and now we don't have the Chevron deference, and now we don't have affirmative action. We have people suing young black entrepreneurs who want to do equity funding for other black women. We have chaos.
So, Judge, if you were a delegate to the convention, what would you do? Would you honor what voters decided in the primaries?
You know, I was once in a judges meeting where we didn't like something that was going on. And one of my learned colleagues said, I vote to suspend the rules. Hmm. And the vote carried. So I think we
That's what you want to do here? Judge, I really appreciate the call and the comments. Matt Dalek, I'll give you a crack at answering that. Should we suspend the rules here? Should delegates be unfaithful at the convention and do what their conscience says rather than what voters have decided?
Well, I think I understand the sentiment, and there may be, you know, some who end up doing that, but I just don't see, because the delegates, remember, their power flows more, I think, from the vote that they won to become a delegate. Mm-hmm. And it also flows from, I mean, you know, imagine a sitting member of Congress who will be a delegate, for example, saying, you know, my congressional district voted overwhelmingly for Biden in the primary, but in conscience, I can't vote. You know, they're typically very much connected to their communities, mm-hmm. to their voters, to their district. And so I think it'd be very hard for them to defy the will of, you know, there are not, not a lot of examples, I guess, of profiles in courage, right? And not only that, though, I mean, this is just how politics work and where they get their power from. So, you know, I don't, but I also want to just add one thing, which is, you know, the caller made a really interesting point about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I've also heard people talk about Dianne Feinstein, the senator from California, who died in office and was clearly very ill for quite a while as a sitting senator. And I think that, you know, that's a fair point, right? I mean, these people hold enormous power. And while there is never a perfect time, right, to step aside, you know, this is real world consequences. And so I think it has ratcheted up the pressure on Biden after that debate performance, given especially what Democratic voters saw with both Senator Feinstein and Justice Ginsburg.
Yeah, yeah. Abbas, I want to give you a chance to talk just a bit about what you would encourage, I guess, committed delegates to do. You're an uncommitted delegate. You can actually do whatever you want and be faithful to the voters, I guess. But should delegates who cast their ballots for Joe Biden be thinking about their consciences as much as they're thinking about, you know, what voters have sent them there to do?
So, I mean, I think this is a question for Democratic Party leadership, and I think this is a question for Joe Biden more than it is a question for any individual delegate.
Yeah.
You know, the only person who can decide to step aside is President Biden. Mm-hmm. The only person who can influence him to step aside potentially is Jill Biden and maybe a handful of people around him. I think leaving it up to the delegates is, you know, these are delegates who have been sent with a very clear mandate, most of them to vote for President Biden, for a few of us to vote uncommitted as you know, pro-Palestinian, anti-war, pro-peace votes. You know, if something else is going to play out at this point, since voters have already voted, you mentioned the 14 million votes, since voters have already voted, I think this is a question that President Biden needs to answer very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about delegates and conventions and the choices that face Republicans and Democrats right now as we get ready for the 2024 presidential election. We will continue to hear from you as well on the phones and on social if you want to join. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. We're back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us. We're talking about the process by which the major political parties in this country select their nominees for president. The Republican convention is underway right now in Milwaukee. The Democrats will gather later this summer in Chicago, presumably to renominate President Joe Biden. What we're talking about is, well, what if they didn't do that? How would that work? What would that look like? And I guess what would emerge on the other end of it? Would it be a nominee and a process that is more representative of the way people are thinking and feeling? Or would it be less representative than what voters decided in all of the primaries that were held mostly this spring? We want to hear from you as well. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We've got Professor Matt Dalek here with us. He is a political historian at George Washington University. Also with us is Abbas Alawiya. He is an uncommitted delegate for Michigan to the Democratic Convention in Chicago. Let's go next to Gene in Detroit. Gene, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen.
Hey, Gene.
Just like to ask the professor, in the event of an open convention, what would be the role of the superdelegates?
Great question, Gene. Superdelegates were a pretty controversial subject a couple elections ago. There was a lot of fighting over who they were and what they were doing and whether they should even exist. Professor Dalek, what role do they play in this process?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there were more superdelegates, I believe well over 1,000 in 2016, and especially the Bernie Sanders forces were, and this was even an issue in 2008 mm-hmm. in the contest between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. which is these people are, they're delegates, but they have a special status, but they don't come, they're not reflective of any vote that people took, right? These are, in a way, a vestige of that old system where you had powerful party officials who were deciding the nomination. And so what happened was essentially, I think that number, the number of superdelegates have been lowered from roughly, over 1,000 to now it's several hundred, I think. So they're not numerically as important and as influential as they were in 2008 or even 2016, but they would have a vote, right? They would have a vote still. And they would be wooed just as any other delegate would be wooed by mm-hmm. by any candidate trying to win the nomination. They are a particularly visible people, right? They maybe senators or members of the Democratic National Committee, and so their endorsements could also really weigh quite heavily on the process. So they do have still, I think, a kind of outsized power. But not nearly as much a power and clout and not as large a share of the vote as they had in 2008 or even 2016.
Yeah, yeah. Gene, it's a great question. I'm really glad you called and asked that. Let's go next to Joan in Southfield. Joan, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I have a couple of questions. I'd like to know, first of all, the electorate, the grassroots, the bottom line people who vote for these people in supposedly in power, where does their power come from? Second of all, the information that is being given to them through the media, whatever their medium is, who supplies the information to them?
To the delegates, you mean?
Any of the that information, yes. Hmm. And this program in particular also, the individuals who are listening to this program right now, they are primarily, from my standpoint, I'm a black person, woman. Mm-hmm. A lot of this information, Stephen, that comes through your program is essential to me, and I appreciate it. However, there are many questions that have come up that I was not aware of. Hmm. Your role to provide to me, the listener, mm-hmm. on your program mm-hmm. is essential. The information that is coming through from your program, where is this information coming from? The guests that you have on your show, how vested are they in the information that they are providing?
It's a great question, Joan, and I mean I appreciate the skepticism. I think it's important, especially nowadays, to not just accept what you hear or read, but ask where it comes from. I can say that, the producers who work here and I work really hard to make sure that we invite people who have wonderful experience and knowledge and perspective to bring to the topics and the issues that we want to discuss. I think the producers did a wonderful job today, right, getting us an actual delegate to the convention and a professor who spends his time thinking and researching about how all of these things work. You know, the question I want to put to both these guests from Joan, though, is about that grassroots influence. I mean, I think what she's really asking is, how does grassroots politics end up making a difference in this process? And Abbas, I think you're a perfect person to answer that. I mean, like as you said, you started a movement to try to influence the Democratic primary. In the end, you didn't get what you wanted, but you ended up with a voice at the convention. Is that enough? Is that sufficiently reflective of the kind of democratic influence that you think grassroots people like yourself ought to have?
Yeah, I mean, I think I really appreciate the question. I think we have a responsibility as the grassroots, as regular everyday people who weren't born into any kind of institutional power, but who have power as people, especially when we come together around an idea for a better world or for saving or improving lives. I think we have a responsibility, especially in moments like this where so much is at stake. So much is at stake. Palestinians continue to be killed using U.S. taxpayer funds by the thousands. So much is at stake when abortion is on the line. When Donald Trump's, you know, and the Republican Party's Project 2025, they have really, really destructive policies waiting for us if Donald Trump were to be elected. So I think our responsibility is to stay focused on the issues and recognize that we're all doing our best, but you know that the odds in some ways are stacked against regular everyday people when we have these sort of big events that are happening. You know, we just experienced an attempted assassination, of Donald Trump over the weekend. That kind of political violence is becoming, it feels like it, you know, that the situation is becoming more hostile. And so we have to stay focused on the issues and recognize that, like, folks like me, I'm an uncommitted delegate. I've been talking to a bunch of delegates all around the country, uncommitted and Biden delegates, and we're regular everyday Americans who are experiencing the chaos of this moment just like anyone else. Mm-hmm. And so there's a responsibility for us to continue to be in conversation, to have the tough conversations about what Trump's America would look like, what our responsibilities are for the next few weeks, especially around the convention, but also what we want for our country and how we achieve a better world.
Yeah. Dr. Dalek, can you talk about the role that, grassroots politics plays in all this, and whether at an open convention it would feel more, I guess, democratic, it would feel more grassroots, or is the grassroots kind of reflected mostly in the primary voting?
Yeah, such a great question. So I would say, broadly speaking, these grassroots movements on the right, on the left, and in between are so essential to the democratic process. I mean, I cannot overstate how important they have been historically and are still today at affecting change. And the challenge, of course, is that the change does not happen overnight. And in fact, a lot of grassroots movements can lose, and they can fail. They can fail again and again and again, and then they end up winning. So, you know, if we take the side of, the Parkland movement, the March for Our Lives on gun control, they have made some progress. It has been a genuinely, I think, grassroots movement over several years. But, you know, these can sometimes take decades. The end of slavery, right? The abolitionist movement, mm-hmm. The civil rights movement. I mean, these are decades in the making movement. And what they do, though, is that they force, often, not always, force political leaders to pay attention. They shift public opinion. They put issues into the center of debate that were not there. And oftentimes, you know, an issue like climate change, right? Grassroots activists are essential. So I just can't overstate the importance of them. And then in terms of the convention, it would be very interesting because, for example, someone like Vice President Harris would almost certainly go to the uncommitted bloc, right? If Biden stepped aside, she would go to the uncommitted bloc, and she would have to make her case, not just to this block of delegates, but to all the people that they represent. That would be an important process.
Abbas, we've only got about 20 seconds, but I see you jumping in here.
Yeah, I just really appreciate Dr. Dalek's point. And I, you know, yes, our uncommitted movement hasn't achieved the end of, you know, U.S. funding of the mass killing of Palestinians. But I've heard from folks inside the White House that the one thing that got them to shift their language, to pause the sending of 2,000-pound bombs from the inside, was uncommitted voters showing up and voting. And so what happens next? You know, we're all ears. I'm looking at Vice President Harris. I'm looking to see what President Trump does. There's a lot more to be done.
Yeah. Okay. Great conversation. Abbas Alawiya, great to have you back here with the Sun Created Equal. And Professor Matt Dalek, wonderful to have your brain in this conversation as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
It's going to do it for us on Created Equal. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.